Okay, good morning, everybody. It's wonderful to see you all again after the weekend. Again, we're schmoozing a little bit before we started, but we will do something on Tisha B'Av Day. The time might be a little bit flexible. We are scheduled to end Kinos of the Bayit at 12:30, and I'm just managing the program. So if that happens, we can start at 12:30, 12:35. You might go over a little bit. You might need an extra few minutes. So whatever, stay tuned. I'll probably I'll send out a message to everybody. But assume it's at 12:30, unless you hear otherwise. And if you have to stick around a blank Zoom screen for a few minutes, I apologize in advance. But let's begin. I wanted to do so we have a few days this week, and obviously since the Shavuot Shechabot, the days leading up to Tisha B'Av, I figured, you know, it's worthwhile maybe obviously focusing on that topic. There's so many, there's literally, tragically, there's so many things to talk about. I think tomorrow we'll do another Tanakh topic. But for today, I wanted to actually share with you a pretty amazing story. Let's begin with this. And that's, I don't know if you're familiar, Menachem Begin. Menachem Begin was the Prime Minister of Israel in the 1970s. He was by far the most traditional Prime Minister that Israel has ever had. And he actually flew in the summer of 1977. He actually flew to America, and he had to meet with President Carter at the time. And he's supposed to have a meeting, and he made an announcement that he's not meeting the President of the United States in the morning. He'll only meet with the President of the United States in the late afternoon. And when, now this is the President of the United States, and when the Americans found out that Menachem Begin had arrived and they thought they were going to schedule a meeting in the morning, they were not very happy that he pushed off a meeting with the President until the afternoon. And Menachem Begin was asked to meet the press, which is a very common thing. And in the afternoon, finally, when they have their press, the meeting with the press, he picks up the microphone and he says, before I deal with politics, I need to explain the situation. And this is in front of, this is on international news, literally in front of the entire world, 1977. Menachem Begin goes, approaches the microphone. I'm sure the speech can be found online somewhere. And he says, ladies and gentlemen, today is not a regular day in the Jewish calendar. Today is the ninth day of the Hebrew date of the month of Av. Today, 1,907 years ago, the Romans destroyed the Jewish temple, and they sent our temple ablaze, and they subjugated our people, and it was a cause of terrible many years of suffering and humiliation. And we remember that day, and we have responsibility that that day will never, ever happen again. And that the Jewish people should never become homeless, and the Jewish people should never become defenseless. And it is very important for the Jewish people to remember this day. And we mourn this day, and we cry on this day, as we have been for hundreds and hundreds of years. And any nation must always recall and remember the past memories of the Jewish people. And that is how we have to guide our future. And while it is important to celebrate Yom Kippur and to celebrate Pesach, Passover, he said the Jewish people are an eternal people. And that is why we also need to remember where we came from to help us point to a brighter future. And that is why we mourned as a people today on Tisha B'Av. That is why I did not feel it was appropriate to meet with the President of the United States. Now, that was a very big deal that he said this. And he pulled out, you know, he made a speech from a crumpled piece of paper that he was reading off. And Menachem Begin's name is Menachem Begin. His name is Menachem. Do you know why? Menachem Begin was born on the 10th day of Av. And he saw himself as Menachem, as comforting the Jewish people. And he saw himself as a life mission, that his mission is to provide comfort to Am Yisrael, to the Jews, both in Israel and the diaspora. And that was the real context of how he lived his life, how he tried to live his life, which is truly, it's really a pretty amazing thing. There was an amazing article that I read many years ago in a Torah Mada journal, a discussion that took place between an elderly man and his grandson. And the grandson, they're both Jewish, the grandson had become quite secular, and the conversation was again around, you know, this time of year. And the grandson turns to his grandfather and said, you know, Grandpa, what exactly are you doing? You are literally, you know, placing ashes on your forehead, and you're sitting and you're crying over a temple that you claim was destroyed twice. Since that happened 1900 years ago. And what exactly are you doing? Get over it. It's like been a very long time. You need to be able to, you know, how long are you going to wait for this temple to be rebuilt? You know, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, you know, it's been hundreds of years. It's been, you know, thousands of years. Why exactly are you continuing to behave in this very strange manner? And the grandchild seemed extremely, extremely distant from what his elderly grandfather seemed to very, you know, archaically seemed to be holding on to concepts and ideas that seemed to be an ancient relic. And so, you know, I think one of the great messages in Judaism is our ability to kind of bring back time. But our mistake if we think that, you know, that we're just sitting on the floor and we're just remembering what happened thousands of years ago, and that's where we find ourselves in the few days before Tisha B'Av, you know, it is not about, or it's not just about history. It's not just about the past. And you know, we, in fact, the language of the kinos, those of you that recall the kinos, the night of Tisha B'Av, the language, I have it actually right in front of me, the language that we say immediately after we finish saying Eicha, and by the way, what's fascinating, I was thinking about discussing this today, maybe we'll do another day this week, going through Eicha. Eicha is very difficult to put any historical accuracy with the words of Yirmiyahu. First of all, it is the Chazal say that Yirmiyahu wrote it. It is not so simple to say Yirmiyahu wrote it because his name isn't in it. He makes very vague references to anything that is going on around him. Is he writing this before the Churban, during the Churban, after the Churban, reflecting? Not so simple at all. It is very complicated. And all that is intentional, in my opinion, because he's trying to say this is an ahistorical Megillah. It is not a Megillah he's writing about an event. He's not really describing an event. He's describing things around him. He's describing emotions. He's describing, should we still believe in God after destruction and Churban? And he, you know, and he talks about, you know, reaching out to God and questioning God and describing the very difficult life that Yirmiyahu is going through. But he's not, he makes very, you know, there are no direct references to anything historical, except we know that, like, there's a tragic loss and that Jerusalem is being scorned by its enemies. And the language after we recite Eicha, and it's true, the first kina is Zechor Hashem Maya Lanu. Remember what we used to have. The third kina, however, begins Belelze Yivkalu V'Leilai Banai, that on this night we are going to cry. That on this night these terrible tragedies actually befell the Jewish people. Meaning it is not about Belel Zeh, meaning 1900, almost 2000 years later, we are still going to cry, right? That we are still going to cry, so more than 2000 years later, right? 2000 years, we say Belel Zeh, that tonight, it's not that we're just living in the past, right? It would be absurd to just say we're discussing things of the past. The Jewish people never commemorate the past. We commemorate the past in order to appreciate the present and to plan for the future. But the past, we don't look at the past. And that's why we're not interested in dating. You know, it's very complicated, by the way. When was the first time Jews, you know, scratched their head and said, what year is it, right? Tanakh has no years, meaning they date things from, you know, the various kings or since the Yetzias Mitzrayim. But there's no date. It takes us almost in the middle of Bayit Sheni to someone to scratch their head and to say, what year are we in? right? Yossi ben Chalafta, I believe, was the name of the Tana, who tried to figure out what year we're in, and he takes Tanakh, he tries to figure out how many years there's been since creation in the world. But there was no real Masorah. Why? Because it's not about years, don't matter, right? They don't really play a tremendous significance in Jewish life and Jewish history. And that's why, when you want to talk about history, the word history in English really is his story. Right, his story. But that's not a Jewish concept. Rav Kook was once asked, how do you say history in Hebrew? And despite maybe what our some of our classes, not in yeshivas, but in girls' schools, seminaries, they use the word historia, historia Yehudit, right? But obviously that's not a Hebrew word either, because historia is just the word history, just, you know, spelled Hebrew letters. So what is the true authentic word for history in Hebrew? Rav Kook said the word zechor. Jewish memory is the only authentic word for Jewish history, because Jews don't really live in the past. We look at the past and really we relive those moments on an ongoing basis. Tisha B'Av, the 9 days, are not things that happened to our great-grandparents, lo aleinu, but they are events in our life and inform us even today. And that's why if you take a look at the kinos that we recite, we talk about the destruction of the two Bate Mikdash for actually a very short period of time. Most of the kinos that we recite have nothing to do with the Churban HaBayis. We talk about the terrible, tragic death of Yoshio HaMelech, right? The terrible death of Yoshio HaMelech. And we talk about the destruction of Shiloh, right? With Eli and Pinchas, right? The very difficult, of those of you that are familiar with the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, right? How Shiloh was destroyed. And more importantly, why Shiloh was destroyed, right? And it talks about, you know, the Jewish books being burnt. And it talks about the Asahura Yemalchus, which really spanned many, many decades. The 10 tragic deaths of those of the Jewish leaders who were murdered by the hands of Roman persecution. Which, again, the historic date is not even mentioned, right? But all these things, we talk about the Crusades, we talk about the Komnisky massacres. And in the modern times, you even have kinos that describe the modern day Holocaust. And the famous, of course, Tzion Oti Shaliba from Rav Yehuda Halevi. Because it's not about necessarily living at any moment, but it's about trying to see this notion of Chorban and destruction. Why has it happened? Where has it gotten us? And why are we here at this very moment? And so I think, you know, when we want to talk about it, it is not about the past. It is not just about the past. It's trying to be really, really informed about the future as well. And to almost look at life around us and say, well, what is it? What can I learn? What can I do different? Because I'm looking at life and I'm looking at events around me and I'm looking at history and I'm trying to see how it really speaks to me. And that's how the Rav Elazar Kalir, the great poet of many, many, many of the kinos, he really tries and he puts himself into the kinos. And that is why, in many ways, the kinos themselves try to elicit almost a sense of reflection and emotion on an ongoing basis. And what's it all based on, in my opinion? The words of Yirmiyahu from the Megillah of Avecha itself. I want to just share a few ideas today. Number one, there's a... Rav Soloveitchik, those of you that are not familiar, Rav Soloveitchik, when he was living in Boston, would spend the entire day on Tisha B'Av really explaining and expanding on the kinos. The kinos are quite complicated. They are very, very poetic. And while they do make references to many different places in Chazal, you have to be a real expert to understand where they're from and their nuance. So when the kinos are really reflecting various parts of Gemara, of Midrashim, some Midrashim that are famous, like from Echa Rabbah, and some which are much more obscure, referencing various stories in Tanakh, the authors assumed that you'd be familiar with them. and that, you know, by quoting a line or a passage, we'd appreciate the context. And unfortunately, that's not really the case. And so Rav Soloveitchik used to spend hours and hours and hours explaining line by line the kinos, not just a translation of them, but trying to really bring them to life. And he'd bring Gemaras, and he'd bring Midrashim, and he'd bring examples of what he saw in contemporary America, reflecting on his life as a child from Europe, right? He only moved to America when he was in his early 20s. In fact, he got married. His parents were not even at his own wedding. And, you know, and trying to explain and bring the Tisha B'Av to life. Because Rav Soloveitchik said that just like there's an obligation on Pesach to put yourself that I left Egypt, so too we are obligated on Tisha B'Av to have that same idea. It is as if we left Yerushalayim. And that was an obligation that we all know, B'chodor V'dor, Kilu Yatzam Mitzrayim. That's our obligation on the Pesach night. And our obligation is very similar on Tisha B'Av night. And that is why there are many references to Pesach and to Tisha B'Av. A common one, which I'm sure you might be familiar with, is the famous, the first day of, you know, Aleph. Pesach has 7 days. Forget Etei Pesach, that's in Chutz Aretz. 7 days of Pesach correspond to different holidays. I'm not going to go through it right now in reverse alphabetical order, meaning the first day of Pesach and Taf, which is Tisha B'Av. The first night of Pesach will be the exact same night as Tisha B'Av, which means that just like this year, Wednesday night, Thursday is Tisha B'Av, first night of Pesach from a couple months ago, beginning of the coronavirus, but also Tisha B'Av. Remember, it's a three-day yontif. There's a minhag that many people have to have an egg. Why do we have an egg on the night of Pesach? Some people say it's Zech LeKorban Chagiga. Others say, you know what it is? It's because in many ways, it's like a Tisha B'Av, right? On the night of Pesach, we say L'Shana HaBab Yerushalayim, and we say on Tisha B'Av, we hope and we yearn L'Shuvi the Yerushalayim. Right, and those are many examples that we have in Yirmiyahu. Maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more tomorrow. Yirmiyahu makes many references to Mitzrayim as well in the opening few psukim of Eicha. And so this notion of Tisha B'Av and this notion of Mitzrayim, of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Seder, have many links. And in many ways, the potential for Tisha B'Av is almost like a mini Pesach, just like there was a Geula. Because remember, if every time we talk about redemption, the model is always Pesach. Just like God redeemed us in the past, that is what gives us the license almost to believe fully that God will redeem us in the future. And just like Arush Baruch Hu gave us miracles, Benisiv and Niflaos the night of Pesach, around that time, so too, that will happen again around the times of the galus and times of the dispersion and suffering, and it, which is only temporary. And so that is why Tisha B'Av and Pesach are intimately connected to each other. That because Pesach existed, it gives a sense of hope and meaning and purpose to Tisha B'Av. That our sadness, our tears, and our mourning is also only temporary. But we have to feel, we have to appreciate. Just like we have to appreciate the simcha and the joy of the geula, we also have to sadly appreciate the tragedies and connect to the Jewish suffering that has existed for hundreds of years. And the truth is, in many ways, this year might be easier. You know, we've been exiled from exile this year. I think I used that line before, last week, right? You know, we were in exile from our homes, from our shuls, from our communities, now for many months. Even though life has returned a little bit back to normal, it is nothing like it was from, you know, 4 or 5 months ago. And so I think that's that plays a role in perhaps appreciating the Tisha B'Av specifically this year. The one of the, and again, based on what we recall last week, I put a tremendous emphasis on understanding Mechiras Yosef, on the Seal of Yosef. And if we understand Mechiras Yosef, the Seal of Yosef, we'll have an appreciation for the entire, the tears from Yirmiyahu. And many of Mechiras Yosef, and episode on Yosef, is the basis for tragedy. And remember, that is how Galus begins. We sell our brother, and that begins the exile. And there's a, and I'm sure you're familiar with this. If not, it's worthwhile being familiar with it. One of the reasons why we dip what? Karpas. Why do we dip karpas in Meimelach and salt water the night of Pesach? Says the Rishonim. Rashi even mentions it. We do it because we dipped Mechiras Yosef. We dipped Yosef's coat in blood. Remember, when else do we dip something in blood? That is, of course, Korban Pesach. The Agudas Ezov, we dip into blood. Karpas, Rashi says, is describing kutnos of Yosef. Yosef's coat, which was dipped in blood. We dip therefore karpas in salt water, the tears. It's the tears that we cried, the bitter tears. The merirus, the bitterness that we had in Egypt, is of course connected to the bitterness of Echa, the bitterness of Tisha B'Av. And whose fault was that? We sold Yosef. It is our fault why we are in these situations. And I think that is also an important idea. And Yirmiyahu focuses on this idea in Echa in great deal, that not to blame other people, but to take personal responsibility. He questions God. He says, it might be our fault, but why do we have to suffer this much? Yirmiyahu is not afraid to ask such questions. Rav Soloveitchik said, Echa is the heter. Echa is the matir to question God. You're not allowed to, we don't really question God throughout the entire year. On Tisha B'Av, it's very different because we use Echa. Yirmiyahu asks the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Echa, is this, do we really deserve this much suffering? This much pain? We weren't perfect. We made mistakes. Yes, it's true. We might have sold a brother. Yes, it's true. We might not have listened to Yirmiyahu and to all the Nevi'im, right? And we said God would never destroy the Beis Hamikdash, right? If you study the words of Yirmiyahu, you know, Perlamet Aleph and Kafa, you see the people said, yeah, you know why Yisroel was destroyed? The northern kingdom, they were so bad. They were terrible. We're not nearly that bad. And besides, we're Yehuda. The Beis Hamikdash, God would never allow the Beis Hamikdash to be destroyed. And Yirmiyahu and Zephaniah and other Nevi'im who lived said, not true. Not true. God will destroy the Beis Hamikdash unless you change your behavior. Don't look at Yisrael and say, ha ha, we are better than them. They got destroyed. We are going to be okay. It was a terrible tragedy. This notion of we are holy and that we are self-righteous and we're better than other people. All of this led to really the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash. And so Soloveitchik felt that Echa, the notion of questioning God, of asking why did this happen? And yes, it's true, it's our fault, but should we really be the joke of the world where we have everyone turns against us, where we have so many enemies? Do we deserve all that? Are we deserving of Vatochalna Nashim Priyam, where mothers literally have to eat their children to survive? Do we deserve all that? Were we really that bad? Look what has happened to us. And so Yirmiyahu asked those questions and explained Rav Soloveitchik, Echa is the heter. Echa is the license to question God. Yes, it's true. There's tzidduk hadin. We accept judgment. We accept judgment and we take responsibility and we are accountable for what we did, our forefathers did. As we know, of course, every generation doesn't build the Beis Hamikdash. We take responsibility for it not being built in our time and therefore we are accountable. We have to say, Ashabnu, Bagadnu, Gazalnu, that we've sinned. And we're no better and we're no worse than our great-grandparents. And therefore, we have to take a sense of responsibility. But we can't end on a low note. We can't end on, you know, depression, and we're not allowed to do that. So I'm going to end with an insight that I heard. I don't know exactly when it was. A few days before Tisha B'Av, I heard this from those of you that went to Mechalam. I know him, Rabbi Avishai David. Rabbi Avishai David... I went to Achraim, who's my Rosh Yeshiva at the time, that he made Aliyah a number of years ago. And he told this to me, Tisha B'Av, right before Tisha B'Av of 1995. How many years ago was that? I don't know. A lot of years ago. I can't remember how many years ago it was. I don't know. 25 years ago. Tisha B'Av 25 years ago. Right. Now is what it is for Tisha B'Av. So maybe it's exactly 100 years ago, somewhere around there. And I called him up. I spoke to him on a payphone. You know what a payphone is? You don't know what a payphone is? I think they're 50 cents. If you can find the payphone, if you have a payphone, save it. It'll be worth a lot of money one day. It's like a typewriter, right? A payphone. I spoke to him on a payphone 25 years ago. Wow, that's amazing. I remember this very vividly. I know exactly where I was and why I needed to call him. Not for now. But his story, he said to me a tremendous insight. This is what I want to share with you, and that will end with this. The question is, why is it that Yaakov Avinu was unable to be consoled? Again, you'll recall, we discussed this the last couple of weeks, that all his children and grandchildren went to console Yaakov Avinu, and no one was able to console him. No one was able to console him. And the question is why? Why is that? The Gemara Moed Katan says, Zaman Shichacha, there's a time you forget things. And what is it? A year. After a year, Zman Shichecha is called Yud Beis Chodesh, which is why every year we have to remind ourselves of Mechiras Amalek, because our mind forgets after a year. Why is it we have a Yurtzeit? Because after a year we forget things. We want to remember those people that we lost. That's this. That's the concept. Ask Rav Soloveitchik, I don't understand. How come Yaakov Avinu, don't get me wrong, death of Yosef, tragic, the whole thing. But why is it that for decades no one was able to console him? Get on with your life. He lost his nevuah, said Chazal. Don't get me wrong, it's terrible, it's a tragedy. But Yaakov Avinu, why is it that he was unable to take a step forward? I explain Rav Soloveitchik the following. Have you ever spoken to a parent whose child was abducted and is being held captive by Hamas or by Hezbollah, right? And sadly, we know many of these parents. And you ask them, are you able to move on with life? They will tell you they're not able to move on. Why? Because they don't know exactly what is going on with their child. When is it that there's Zman Shichecha Min Halev? When is there that there's you're able to get on after the death of somebody? When there's death. When there's a Kavura. When there's a Levaya. When there's a Shiva. When there's a definitive moment. As pain and tragic and painful and sorrow as it is, there's also a cathartic moment to it. That takes weeks and takes months. Takes a long time. But eventually, through Nechama, through friends and family comforting you, you're able to go on. But when there's no Shiva and there's no real death, it's very hard to move on with life. And that, Rav Soloveitchik explains, why is it that the Jew, for 1900 years, going back to what Menachem Begin said, what I referenced half an hour ago, why is it that the Jewish people for 1900 years have not been able to be consoled, that we continue to mourn and to cry and to remember? Reason number one is because it's not something that happened 1900 years ago. It is still going on today. Every tragedy, Jewish suffering, anti-Semitism, hatred is all because of the Chorban. And there's this other reason. The reason is because it's only finite. The only time we can move on from something if something is truly finite. But the loss of the Beis HaMikdash is not finite. It's going to be rebuilt again. And perhaps also, Yaakov Avinu knew that what? Yosef might be still alive. There was a doubt in his mind. He only saw the tunic. He only saw the kunos pasim. He only saw Yosef's coat. He never saw a bone. He never saw flesh. He couldn't do DNA testing on the blood, right? He didn't know. He didn't have anything definitive. There was a suffix in his mind. And the moment there's a suffix, perhaps he hoped and he yearned that one day he will be able to embrace his son again in the future. And that, my friends, is the reason why we continue to mourn. Because one day we know, we are assured that just like there was Geula in the past, we are also going to be redeemed in the future. And one day in the future, may it be very soon, we'll also be able to embrace Yosef. We'll be able to embrace the third Beis HaMikdash. We'll put an end to all the mourning and suffering. May it come very speedily in our days. Amen. Thank you, everyone, for joining. Have a marvelous, meaningful Monday.